And the background of this is that solar panels are coming down in price, are becoming more competitive, and we're starting to see more interest throughout the United States of people putting up solar panels and alternative energy components within communities. And so I did a little bit of checking several months ago and found that a lot of communities are starting to say, well, we don't have anything in our ordinances to deal with these issues. I mean, this is brand new technology. And, you know, so a lot of communities in the United States are starting to develop ordinances in terms of managing, I won't say restricting, but, you know, managing the placement of solar panels and windmills and all that type of thing. So anyway, I've raised the issue, thinking about the future, that maybe we should have an ordinance now, because probably in the next year or two, these things will start to be very cost competitive, and we're going to start seeing more and more of these being put in place. In fact, we already have a couple in Curie Beach.
Yep, just another one.
So anyway, we talked a little bit about it, and last meeting, if you look at the minutes, I said I would do a little more research on it and come back maybe with some ideas about an ordinance that we may want to consider and so forth. And so that's what I've done. Let me pass this out right here. It's just a three-pager with a picture. Here. There's another one. Yeah, I actually made one for Tim. Anyway, the first one is actually a picture that I found, and I have to admit, just in the last couple months, as you Google this, you find that just in the last months, a lot of communities in the United States now are looking at exactly the same thing that we're looking at. And the reason is for this picture right here. You know, this I found this on one website of a town, exactly why they started to develop an ordinance. Because here you have a huge, you know, set of panels in someone's backyard. The person behind complained about it, and that's exactly the sort of thing that the communities are worried about in terms of developing ordinances to deal with this sort of thing. Because again, there's a big reflection, into people's back windows and, heat and all sorts of things like that, as well as simply the attractiveness. So anyway, what I said is I kind of do some research. I probably looked over the last couple weeks, probably 100 different ordinances that have been passed or proposed through the United States. And what you have on the second two pages here are just simply, I actually found one. It's the Township of Delaware. It's a town of Delaware in, I believe it's in New Jersey. I'm not sure exactly where. And looking at, and boy, I'll tell you, these ordinances are all over the place in terms of some of the issues. But this one seemed to be kind of one of the cleanest, if not the cleanest, that I could find. So again, I'm just going to kind of lay out some of the issues here. And what I did then is I put in little boxes, as you can see, just some comments from what I found in other ordinances. And this is just looking at solar panels. This isn't looking at windmills or things like that yet. So anyway, in the town of Delaware, what they have is they define a minor solar energy facility versus a major solar energy facility. And I thought that was, pretty good. You know, some of them try to define it in terms of wattage that are generated and all that sort of thing. But this one simply says that it's a minor solar facility. If a resident is simply trying to generate no more than 110% of the electrical power used by that particular facility, it's a major solar energy facility if it's over 110%. Now, again, you could say 150%, 140%. You could come up with anything. But again, that's just how they do it here. As it says right here, my little comments down here, the Township of Delaware ordinance seems to be the most specific and understandable of about 100 that I looked at. I didn't put anything about major solar energy because that requires more acreage. So to have a major solar energy, you need, multiple acres of stuff. Probably not something we have to worry about here, but a lot of towns do have space out there, several acres, and people are putting these massive solar farms basically on that. So there, a lot of towns are concerned about that. I'm not sure if we have that issue. Locations, some don't allow it to be seen from the street. Actually, there is a North Carolina general statute that does limit the ability of a community or town or county to put limits on solar panels. But the North Carolina ordinance does allow you to restrict it from view from the street. Okay, so, you know, and again, I think I passed it out last time. Some require review by planning if you can view it from a street. Otherwise, it's just a building permit. So I found several ordinances that says, all right, you can put it in the front of your house on the roof, but if you put it on the front of the house, you actually have to go to the planning process. You have to notify the neighbors and so forth. If it's on the side or the back, it's simply a building permit sort of thing. And then there are other communities that don't have any restrictions. They say you can put it on front, back, side, or whatever. Some I found specifically allow solar over roof deck. So if you have a roof deck, a flat roof deck up there, you can put a solar panel on it. This one doesn't even mention that, but I did find some that did mention it. Almost every ordinance that I could find is much more restrictive for commercial than residential. So I'm just dealing with residential right here. But a lot of them are much, much more restrictive for commercial than they are residential. And as I mentioned, towns more and more looking for regulation, and they're often encouraged by bad placement. So, you know, again, this sort of thing, somebody puts something that just doesn't work, people complain, and all of a sudden the town is trying to deal with that particular issue.
Once it's up, there's no recourse.
Exactly. And again, that's why we're looking at it. What I did find is that what I'll call the very liberal communities, like Santa Monica, California, Boulder, Colorado, and so forth, they are all gung-ho for solar panel, and so they actually have ordinances that say you can put it anywhere. You know, that you can stick it above the height limit. In fact, Santa Monica says that, you know, that you can put it 5 or 10 feet above the height limit. You know, they try to encourage it. So if we have a 35-foot height limit here, if we're in Santa Monica, you can put up your solar panel up to 40, 45 feet. I found one of the more interesting one was Boulder, Colorado, which actually has a shadow regulation. And it's a very, very... I mean, you have to get on this website. It's pretty interesting. They have very complicated shadow regulations that says that if you build something for your house, let's say you build a patio or you build an extension on your house, your shadow cannot interfere with going into other people's properties because they may want to put solar panels up. And there has to be, you know, you have to get out there, and there's a big complicated table in terms of calculating this stuff by, you know, whether you're in the winter solstice or the summer equinox or whatever. So it's pretty amazing,
that is amazing. What
some of them try to do. So anyway, here I thought was kind of interesting. Again, this on the third page here is the information from Delaware in terms of the minor solar, because we really don't have the major, but this is minor. Very, very typical, no roof mounted. Minor solar photo energy facilities or structures shall be installed in a non-conforming structure. That's fairly obvious. The roof-mounted panels shall be mounted parallel to the roof angle and shall not exceed a height of 12 inches above the edge of the roof or above the highest point of the roof surface. So they actually allow it to go above and below the roof surface. As I said over here, some regulate not to exceed the top of the roof line or extend beyond the bottom of the roof line. Again, North Carolina statutes would allow us to have that regulation. So if you have a roof line, the top of the roof there, you know, you could restrict it from going above that top of the roof line. Delaware says you can go above 12 inches above and below the roof line. But certainly there are regulations that do limit it. Should point out that some have no restrictions on panels that are integrated into the roof. We talked about there's different types of panels. The panels that we're showing here and talking about are what are called non-integrated panels, or things that are put on top of the roof, basically. Technology is out there which you can actually make solar panels look like shingles. That's probably where we'll be 10, 20 years from now, but we're not there now. And so, again, some of them specifically say that if panels can be integrated into the roof, there's no restrictions if it looks like shingles and so forth. Let's see. Continue down. It says a roof-mounted structure on a flat roof may be angled to achieve maximum sun exposure. Again, we do have some flat roofs in Curie Beach. You know, if we look at the...
Aaron House?
well, the mobile home type of things, those are all flat roofs.
Okay. Some of the duplex, they got.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave y'all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks.
I thought the meeting went very well, and I think that the public, the general public tonight, found out some stuff that. When we walked outside, you know, I said, "Did you not hear what could be built there now?" I said, "What we're trying to do is protect y'all."
Yeah, that's a.
And they went, we didn't know that. We didn't know. Okay. So don't bite the hand at trying to groom your little gray hairs. Bye, buddy. You ready to wrestle?
You just named the time and place.
Yeah, I know. I'll be back in 3 minutes. I'm going to walk across the street, then we're going to wrestle right out here, okay?
Okay, so anyway, number three there, if you got a flat roof, it allows it to be angled, but it shall not exceed 5 feet above the roof. I found some ordinances that allow it to be angled to 6 feet above the flat roof, you know, a little more of an angle on there. It says in no instance shall extend beyond the roof edge. I guess that's, so I guess they allow 12 inches above the roof line, but not below the roof edge, from the way I read that. And then I thought this was kind of interesting, because a lot of them kind of overlook the plumbing and electrical lines. It says it has to be painted a color scheme that matches as closely as reasonable to the color of the structure, etc. And this one also talks about some safety ones. A lot of the ordinances, I think, are put together pretty quickly, and they don't talk about safety issues. This one did. I thought that was pretty good. An external disconnect switch shall be provided, and the owner must file a map with the fire and police departments, clearly show where the disconnect switch is located. I guess that's in case it starts to short out and, you know, start a fire or something like that up there. So anyway, that's what they have for the roof-mounted minor solar panel facility. For ground-mounted, personally, I'm not a fan of ground-mounted because you get that right there. But we also have to realize that when somebody sticks a solar power little light in the ground, that technically is a ground mounted solar facility. We got to be careful about that. My little lights I have around my patio technically are ground mounted solar facilities.
Excuse me for a second. Do we have any language on the large satellite dishes?
I don't think we have any language, and the homeowners associations do, but we don't as a town.
I mean, there really aren't any large satellite dishes anymore, but I was just wondering if that would be a nice entry.
Right. This, it's funny that you mentioned that because I read several sites that said that what you're seeing here is exactly the same type of situation as the satellite dishes, that many of, what the regulation of satellite dishes, this and the windmills kind of fall from that same type of concept. And that's why people are jumping in a little bit ahead of time.
I was really kind of surprised at the council meeting, to think of some of the people that were on council about not wanting to regulate this, because there's so many things that are regulated, and who would want some large structure like that put in their neighbor's backyard?
Absolutely agree. That's why I want to show this picture. I mean, this is, with what we have now, John, correct me, but every property owner could do something like this as long as you satisfy your 5 foot setback, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was the seating on the side of a football field.
All right, for ground mounted, most. Unless you're Boulder, Colorado, or something like that, almost all communities that I could find have some regulation about ground-mounted. It's done many different ways that I could find. As you can see right here, they don't allow any ground-mounted on lots less than 1 acre. Okay, that's just how they deal with it. And if you have 1 acre or more, it can't exceed 20% of the lot coverage. Right there. So, that's how they deal with that. Should point out that some regulate ground-mounted by setback requirements. I found several that say 50 feet. I found several that say 75 feet, which basically would, wipe out, the residential, with the exception of maybe a few here. I did find several that, a couple that had as little as 15 feet, but they seem to be correlated in the ordinance with how high the ground mountain is required. So, the one that allowed 15 feet setbacks, you couldn't have greater than 7 feet. Once you start getting higher than, 7 feet, then, it clearly went to 50 feet or 75 feet or something like that. But I couldn't find any, with the exception of the cities that said no regulations, any that allowed anything larger than 12 feet. And again, most of them simply try to discourage it in, the type of residential lots that we have, any sort of ground-mounted type of activity. I found a couple that tried to limit it by the number of panels, such as 10 or less, but, those seem to be in a minority. Most of them were, 50 feet back, 75 feet setbacks. It had to be more than 1 acre, more than half an acre, or something like that. And this one here allows 12 feet, as you can see right here. All power transmission lines to the ground mounted shall be located underground. Inverter noise shall not exceed. That's why I thought this was a good one. This seemed to deal with a lot of issues that we're talking about. So this talks about inverter noise can't exceed 40 decibels at the property line. I hadn't even thought about inverter noises on these things.
Big issue.
So, roadways, and again, an external disconnect switch will be provided with the fire and police department. So, anyway, just for a starting point discussion, I thought that was, I suggested I might try to write an ordinance, but I think there are too many issues for us to discuss in terms of how people generally felt and maybe get feedback from the council as to, some of the issues. Certainly, my feeling is I don't think that we should allow anything that extends above the roof line. I think that doesn't look very attractive. I don't think they should have anything that extends below the roof edge. And I'm very concerned about ground-mounted things that would be just in the normal residential areas. And if somebody has a half acre or an acre or something like that, I can see ground-mounted, with some setbacks. But, that's my own personal opinion. I've done a lot of thinking about whether, it should be, not seen from the front. I think that provides a kind of a discrimination to people that have southern-facing houses that happen to be in the front. Mine happens to be in the back, so if I wanted to put it, it would be, away from the street line. But people across the street from me, that would eliminate them. So my general feeling is that we probably shouldn't restrict that. Should point out that none of this restricts the ability of homeowners association to restrict these things. And even the state law is very specific about that. It says that state law does not apply to homeowners association's restrictions.
Put that over for a second. There's a homeowners association like Ocean Dunes that has a lot of acreage. Okay. Can that be considered one entity and therefore all of that acreage could be taken into consideration as to whether they could put a field of solar panels up to power their own facilities and reduce their overall electrical costs? I mean, you're saying no, John, but based on what? That no, you don't want that to happen, or no, they can't do it?
I'm looking at kind of what we had in front of us, and they don't have any area where they could.
That would be a major solar structure, and actually, under North Carolina law, if I remember right, because I did read all this, if you're powering more than 5 units off of it, it's considered a utility, and as actually is covered under another set of ordinances, which would be based upon a utility. You're actually
that was going to be my second question. Yeah. But for instance, like at Ocean Dunes, where they have a clubhouse and they have tennis courts and they've got outdoor facilities that they could put up solar panels to power all of that stuff. It's not multiple residences, but it's multiple facilities.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a good point.
I mean that's something that we could address in the ordinances, but just looking at what Craig provided for us right here, there's very little area that they would have that would meet as far as the setbacks that he provided in this specific ordinance here.
So we would want, the question is, from a community perspective, would we want to limit entities' ability to put solar panels in, even if they were not judged to be unattractive or noise problems or whatever, keep that uniform? I'm not sure where we draw the line.
Well, I wouldn't want to restrict them that much, but you'd have to be careful when you get into the judging whether or not they're visually obtrusive or too noisy. I mean, who makes that decision other than the 40 decibels? I guess I'll get to get a decibel meter.
And by the way, that's a big issue with windmills. It is sound. I mean, sound in windmills can be quite...
Well, it can be piercing. It doesn't have to be that loud, but if it's a constant noise, it will eventually, you know, drive you out of your mind.
But, you, I mean, you're pretty much thinking of the only one, really, unless some of these homeowner associations in here decided to put some in for their clubhouses.
Some have common area.
Yeah, they got common areas.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just possible.
There's a whole bunch of them.
Why can't we just say no to ground mounted?
I'd rather just go that route.
So, what's that, Alan?
Just say no to ground mounted. So,
It's funny because when you read the North Carolina general statute, it was very poorly written. It's obviously somebody just wrote this very quickly and stuck it in there. They don't even talk about ground mounted. It doesn't even mention ground mounted. So, it'd be interesting to see what the official interpretation of that is. It just deals with roof, and it's weird the way that you know. Wouldn't you agree? Poorly written.
Can't you just see in 5 years with the nanotechnology that's coming our way now? I mean, you're going to be talking solar panels that are going to be this big.
Well, I mean,
it's coming.
This is going to become obsolete just like
probably in 10 or 20 years. They're going to have what are called thin film solar panels where your window would be a solar panel.
Yeah, exactly.
Your shingles would be solar panels.
It's probably going to be where you can paint it on.
Yeah, you can paint it on and stuff like that. So this is a...
That would be pretty damn cool.
That would be real cool.
You know, just like the big satellites have disappeared too. But, but this is kind of a stopgap. Probably for the next 10 or 15 years until that other, the thin film becomes much more popular.
I think if you just worded it, if you said no to it, it just basically that it pertains to either a certain... amount of energy, so it doesn't include the little light that you stick in the ground.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to ride around and grab little lights out of people's yards either.
you don't want the phone call from the guy next door that can't put a satellite. I mean, can't put a solar panel in his yard, but his neighbor's got solar lights. So
I've gotten those kinds of phone calls. I just tell them like it is.
And do those individual little units, they don't have any wiring with them, they're just powering that little light, the sentinel light, and that would be the distinction in my mind. There's no electrical system involved with it other than a self-contained unit.
Right. But I can see,
language.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the little light that I stick into the ground and a solar panel that's on top of a streetlight?
You have to pick the small ones up for a hurricane so they don't fly.
The only difference is the size.
Well, it's also that the little ones, they're not intended to be of general use. It's only powering cell.
It's decoration more.
It's a motor cell.
It's decoration.
A
lot of it is a street light. It would only be to power that street light.
That's true.
Lighting.
We got
some proposals for the park. Sure. They were individual streetlights that had solar panel on.
So they load up the battery.
You see them all over the state highways.
And I think
signs and everything are controlled by solar panels.
I have to admit, when I look through the ordinances, I look through a lot of ordinances and read it, I didn't find a single one that dealt with that particular issue. And all I could think about were my little Walmart things I had in my garage. That those technically are, would be minor solar energy facility or structures. I mean, under this rule there. So, I mean, clearly, if we do something, there would have to be some language that would exempt that type of thing. So, I can search for it. But if I could ask just kind of a general question, I mean, what's your general feeling about, front of the house, back of the house, extending above the roof line? Down to the roof edge, stuff like that.
I like what we talked about the last couple of months, as long as it's 12 inches down from the ridge line, 12 inches up from the eave, I think that would be
so fine. Not even going up to the edge, but 12 inches down from the roof.
What about flat roofs?
We could address that specifically in another section.
Well, what they do is they say on a flat roof, this one allows it 5 feet. It can't go higher than 5 feet. And some of them say 6 feet. I couldn't find anything more than less than five, more than six. you know, the way that was written on terms of a flat roof.
I'm not really sure why somebody would want to do that in the first place. Well, they're trying to get out of the shadow.
Well, they have it aimed towards the sun, you know, so it's a
flat roof. That's true. Like that.
I mean, if you built a house with that in mind and had a mansard roof on it, put that flat top, mm-hmm. and kept it below 35. I mean, we'd have to put, you can't have solar panels over 35 feet because that's not going to pass anyway.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, you could build your house at 30 feet with that flat mansard roof and put the solar and have it designed for the solar panels to be on top.
Yeah. If you're in the B1.
This is just resident. I haven't pulled up commercial. I mean, commercial
Why?
Stuff is
even more residential.
Because the minimum roof pitch for residential buildings is 412.
People allow them all the time. All these duplexes that have mansard roofs on them, they all have flat tops.
Yeah, but from here on out, that's what I'm saying. Well, whenever we put that ordinance in about 2 years ago.
The mobile homes are all flat roofs, and we can't restrict that. I mean,
you're talking about the ones that are existing also.
Yeah.
So you're not going to allow that mansard roof anymore?
Not unless it's in a commercial building or B1.
Okay.
That's where our ordinance is read.
Even the mobile homes won't allow it?
That's debatable.
Okay.
I've had that come up to me before.
Have you constructed anything with solar panels built into the package?
I'm not crazy about the panels they have right now because they sit above the roof. And I think they're a disaster for a windstorm.
Is there a solar panel distributor or whatever in this area?
We've got two.
There's a guy. They're actually soliciting door to door in Cherry Beach Village the last couple of weeks.
I think I'd like to have something over there.
That's exactly right. And I made that phone call.
I think we should address the wind code.
Well, I will say everything that's come in, I've required engineering showing that it will meet or exceed the wind lift, uplift, and the wind code. And I've been provided with that every time.
Because I think I said the last time, the skylight company, Velux, they actually make one that sits on the roof, and they use that same flashing from the skylight. So it mounts to the plywood, then the flashing goes over, and then you roof up to it. The problem with that is you have to be a trained supplier and distributor of Velux. You just can't buy them. And they're in Florida right now promoting it. You know, they said it would be years before they get to North Carolina.
I had solar panels in Ohio, and we had a one story, and they were mounted on the roof and on the side of the house to catch the rays from the snow.
Interesting.
And it was to trip a blower for heating. Oh. It wasn't for water.
Right.
It worked like
Well, yeah, that's the other thing, too. All the ones we've had so far for water heaters.
So it's actually, they're not photovoltaic. They're solar heating via the tubes.
They're making the tubes, that's right.
They're fine, probably. This doesn't even deal with that, and that's another, I mean, you know, I can see us kind of taking our time and going through these different things. I mean, this is actually the photovoltaic, which I have, you know, I'm going to have somebody come out and give me a quote. You know, I have a friend who's, you know, there's about 25% government tax break, credit, actually, with this right now. I mean, it does make it almost, you pay back about 10 years. You know, when you look at the capital costs, you look at the tax credit and stuff like that, it pays for itself somewhere between 8 and 10 years. Right now.
Well, or you have to get something in place, though.
Yeah, cause as soon as everybody does it, then the tax credit's going to go away, obviously. So.
Well, there's a lot of new literature out for the spiral type windmills, too.
That was something we were going to try to tackle on this thing too, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've got the solar panels, you've got the water heating panels, and then you got the windmills. I have to admit that the windmills, actually, the city ordinances aren't as, they're dealing with this more than windmills. Where you have the windmill issues are in county ordinances because people are coming in and doing big windmill farms. So you see a lot of regulation on that. But I don't think a lot of people have come and stuck a windmill in the backyard in Curie Beach Village or something like that. But we could.
Yeah.
You know, we could. I mean, we could stick a 35-foot windmill right out there. You know,
you got something. No, you can buy. You can get the. You can buy from that. What's it, Northern? That catalog comes with mail all the time with all the farm equipment and everything.
Yeah.
You can buy those little tripod metal ones, you know, with little like a whirly gig.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
supply. They supply electricity, but they're noisy as hell.
Well, that was the thing with all the offshore, the big windmills. The question in terms of the how loud that would actually be, you know, even if they were 10, 15 miles out, and you go out there fishing or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's loud as all hell.
I went to Indiana, and there's an area right in what's called Brookston, Indiana, which evidently has come. The wind comes down from Chicago and that area. And there's a stretch where the farmers, you know, they still have the cornfields, but every half mile, there's one of these huge, huge windmills, and yeah. it goes for miles and miles and miles. Right, they are noisy. Let me tell you, they're really impressive. You feel very insignificant standing one next to one of those things, but boy, I tell you, they're scary things when they start, you know, moving around.
I'm on the state committee that's in charge of leasing the blocks offshore, and Jesus. Pictures of some of those?
Yeah. So some of those are about 4 or 5 times larger than those ground mounted ones. They're all made in Sweden or Denmark or places like that. But they're huge, huge.
North Sea.
If it's okay with the commission, what I can do is take the information and work with this and actually come up with language for the kind of a recommended ordinance that we may want to consider dealing with the photovoltaic component of it that we can maybe work through next time.
That'd be great.
And I'll start looking at the windmill component as well as the water heating component, because I think those would be kind of the three issues that we may want to deal with. And I have to admit that a lot of communities now, if you Google it, you see find ordinances for different communities throughout the United States, and a lot of them are dated just in the last couple months. So this is really something that is
turned on everywhere.
It's turned on everywhere right now, yeah.
But you can ask our opinion on from the front of the house to the back of the house.
Yeah.
I think that's a hard one to. I'm going to have to agree. If we stop doing that, then I think it's hard to say someone can't have one on the front of the house, but their neighbor can have one.
Right. Is that, we're pretty agreed on that, okay, so.
I was really wondering how people would feel from a tourist perspective for those places that are oceanfront. Would you want to have those solar panels mounted on the roofs facing east so that the tourists have that wonderful, you know, view of all of that, all those contraptions all the way along, all the thousands? That's another issue.
That actually came up when trying to understand the North Carolina law, because the way it's written, if I remember right, it's from like a public space that you can't view it from you can restrict the view from a public space. And it was written, obviously, whoever wrote the thing was thinking about the street, you know.
Yeah.
But then you start thinking about it, well, you know, people could see the back of my house from the street behind me.
Sure.
And then Emily, I think, mentioned, well, what about, you know, the beach? If you walk down the beach, you know, you may not be able to see that east panel from the street, but you can see it from the beach. And, you know, do we want to think about restricting that?
Restrict them all.
Oh,
John. I think people coming to the beach, I think it would probably be, I don't know if it would be equal, but there'd be just as many people who say they're ugly as, and maybe more people that would say, it's nice to see a green community on the beach. Yeah. People doing something about it.
It's very possible that's the case. And, you know, but again, the question is, would you want to change the aesthetics of the ones that are in the public viewing areas like that versus that you would have, you know, on the back of the house on Fifth, you know, way down there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, how can you do that? You can't. I mean, it's almost like you'd have to pick out this block's allowed this, that block's allowed that. That would be pretty tough to do.
And, you know, it's really trying to get that balance between trying to be a green community versus a beach community with its concern about aesthetics and beauty and the things that we were talking about here. And you know, again, Boulder has gone completely to green, and you can put it anywhere. I mean, literally, you can put these things anywhere. You can put big windmills up and things like that. And then you've got other communities that are very, very restrictive. And I can see us kind of being somewhere, you know, somewhere in between.
Sure. It needs to be progressive. Right? You know, let's take a first step and then see where it goes.
Well, whatever we do is going to be changed.
Yep.
As it goes.
All right, so if it's okay, I'll rework this into something as a proposed straw man ordinance dealing with the photovoltaic. I'll see what's out there in terms of windmills and the heating panels, and because they are different. I mean, they're set up differently and that sort of thing, too. So that's okay?
Yeah.
All right, agenda item C is discuss reaction to workshop.
I'm not sure if we're holding a workshop on potential extension of the, you know, commercial district, or what we have in mind, parking. I wasn't quite sure.
Or sidewalks.
I think that they have a feeling. I think at first they always think there's an underlying reason why we're doing something, and that's why Freddie's asking about. If we change it to business, then they can change the center part with DOT. But I also think they got an education. Aldine was right. They got an education on what's allowed in their community, and that RE2. But they had no idea.
I appreciate the fact that there were three or four people that spoke. And I'm thinking of a community that has, 1,800 or so residents. And, you know, you got four people that show up at a meeting on a pretty critical issue for the community. It's a real potential turning point. And we need a lot more input than that because, you know, the survey clearly shows like the majority of the people that responded, it was 292 people that responded, something like that. And, you know, you've got 180 of them who are saying, clean up the places that are already here, the streets, the buildings, get the place looking better, and we want more things in our own community so that we don't have to go other places to get a cup of coffee, to get an ice cream cone, to do whatever, you know. And but at the same time, I think the vendors have a very legitimate statement by saying that are the people of Huron Beach then going to support those businesses on a year-round basis? That's the big one, you know, because this place gets pretty darn quiet for about 3 or 4 months, you know.
Well, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that, you know, the idea of a mixed use actually protects those type of businesses because they could be a hobby business.
Yeah.
And you could be living above it, or you could actually make money on that property by renting the units above it or something like that. So the idea of mixed use, I think, actually makes it a more viable opportunity because you don't have to support the cost of that lot from the commercial activity or the retail activity. I mean, it could be almost a side thing to, you know, hobby businesses or, you know, a coffee shop that might run just during the tour season,
right,
and you shut it down and so forth. So the more I think about it, the more, at first I was kind of, but then the more I think about it, I think it is a way of protecting, you know, people from going and doing what they could do already, as well as creating and enhancing it in such a way that, you know, you don't have to make a business out of that particular lot because you might have two units that are residential rental units above it, or you live there or something like that.
One of the things we had talked about in the last meeting was if we didn't end up creating a new zone or rezoning the area, is the potential for expanding the number of permitted uses within a zone. So take the R2, and RA2 rather, and turn around and say, okay, you can include these additional. Well, like we said, we got an art gallery that sells art, but you can't have an antiques store that shows antiques and sells antiques. I mean, there's a disparity there that needs to be straightened out, and maybe, you know, variance would do something. There might be a variance question there, but why not do it that way instead of going through a full rezoning? What kind of problems does that create?
Well, it would be through the whole town for RA2.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so what I would suggest is go through this approach. Obviously, there's stuff in RA2 that we don't want in all of RA2, probably. Look at it. There's stuff that really shouldn't be there in the first place.
And we actually went through it. Remember, we went through
We've gone through some of it before. Yeah. So what we should do is go through this RA2 and go ahead and hit RA3 and everything. And we really ought to go through and see what should not be in there.
That's a great idea.
First of all. And what I'm, my line of thinking as far as K Avenue is concerned is I need to talk to our attorney and find out if it's possible that we can put one little excerpt in there that says, along K Avenue only, these permitted uses will be allowed in RA2.
But we still need to have an overlay district then. See, I'm the idea is to make it up. I mean, you look at the land use plan, and I think what we're thinking is that quarter really needs to be multi-use, okay, with the idea of commercial on the bottom, retail, and then... So just by applying a use doesn't take care of that issue. You'd still have to have an overlay district on top of that corridor, you know. So, I mean, if you're going to have an overlay district, why just not rezone that and call it a B7, you know, with very specific things about what could be done as well as it had to be a multi-use.
All right. The other issue is how much you're going to take in. If you just use K Avenue and the lots that face K Avenue, that's not enough for a mixed-use project. I mean, that PFU project went back 300 feet.
It's not deep enough.
Not deep enough. Yeah. I mean, PFU had to go back that far so that they could get enough parking for the residents above it.
Yeah, true. That's
because, I mean, we can waive the parking for the businesses, but we can't waive parking for residents.
Well, what about parking in the middle of the street?
I mean, they're already residents.
I love how serious he looks.
So mixed use is taking an existing residence and simply, you know, let's say there's already a building there. I mean, you don't have to build it. I mean, let's say you already have a building built that is a residence. You just take the bottom and turn it into an RV.
If you take out a two-car garage, which is two parking spaces, to make a business, you have to have enough parking there for that residence. You can't change that.
Yeah, that would have to be part of the overlay.
That's the whole idea of having a mixed use and having enough land to be able to do it, because, I mean, we can't stop building properties that don't have enough parking for residents.
And if you took the one residence upstairs and made two apartments, they didn't double the parking.
Right. So it almost has to be. Like, it's got to go further than K Avenue. It's got to go back, like, 200, 300 feet, I think.
Halfway through the
block then. Well, you see where that's going to go if that ever comes up.
Well, if you want bigger crowds.
But anyway, I mean, we really should go through them all anyway and find out what we don't want.
Yeah. Good feedback, so. I'll be quite honest. I mean, one of the major problems is we don't have existing property owners in that monopoly group over there that is fixing up their buildings. I mean, that's the major problem.
I'm telling you, they won't do it until some competition comes.
When they're asking, I tried to buy one of those properties over there. They're asking $700,000 for a little teeny thing like that.
Where was this at? This property?
Oh, this is probably about 5 years ago. It was the one right next to the pier house that they ended up buying. You know, it was a T-shirt shop or something.
Yeah,
and
curio.
They wanted $800,000.
Might want that much more.
$800,000.
The only thing Mike doesn't own is the little T-shirt shop that's next to
which
is Jack Mack.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean,
he's using that now just as a supply.
That's all he's using it. Yeah, that's what it was bought for. I actually look quite seriously about buying that, but not for that price. I mean, you have to figure out what you'd have to make as profit just to service the debt on that. It's ridiculous.
The dirt lot, John, behind Beach Burgers.
Yes, sir.
Everybody parks it.
Yes, sir.
Is that private property?
Yes, sir.
Mike's property.
He's just allowing parking there because it provides parking for his businesses.
He can shut it down at any time.
Well, he's got that all locked up, don't he?
Well, and the amazing part is, whether you like Mike or not, even when he's been in fights with the town, there's never been the threat of shutting down the ability for any stranger to park there.
Because he could just make it pay for him if he wanted.
Because if he just put a string across the entrance, that's X number of cars that got to find another place to park.
This is, as in economics, we talk about the danger of monopoly power. I mean, this is a monopolist, and that's a fundamental problem. And I think you're right. You know, this might create... In fact, I'm surprised we didn't have some...
I was too.
...folks here objecting to this from that perspective. They'll couch it in different ways, but that, they don't want competition. So, anyway.
I actually think a coffee shop, you know, the Bagels Donuts kind of coffee shop type of thing, would really actually work.
I think it would work, and I think some hobby businesses of people that, you know, that... You know, let's say an artist.
Yeah.
You know, this could easily be an art community. This, we have an astounding location here. This is a very unique area, and we
have
we could have astounding things here. And clearly, this could be an art community. I mean, you could have a couple artists there. They have a gallery on the bottom floor, and that would work. I mean, not as a way of trying to make a lot of money, but a way of just.
Is the wood carver still? Does he still live there? The guy on 421.
Peter Dorn. He's a photographer now. He lives postcards and he works out of his
house. A photographer could do it. I mean, he could have a, you know.
There's plenty of photographic gallery. How many places do we have that?
Well, it's really interesting because some of the things that you have, like candy store, you know, ice cream or frozen yogurt or types of things, and I think they're all the businesses that are Mike businesses. And they want a freestanding facility. You know what I mean?
Pay toilets.
Pay toilets. I tell you what. I mean, I know we're going to have toilets at the park. I mean, the oceanfront park.
Maybe.
Oh, I know there's problems, but I think maybe it might be resolved.
Right? They just might not flush. The way things are going.
They might just be holes in the ground by the time it's all over with. I mean,
get it.
Okay, I'm going to use the chair's discretion here and say that we've maybe finished discussion and open the action. Since we've moved to holes in the ground and toilets. Any new business? Any new business by anybody?
Well, I'd like to welcome my new member.
Yes.
Welcome aboard.
Do you need contact information,
please? Yeah. Get that from you before you leave.
And the last thing is member items. Anything there? And if not, is there a motion to adjourn?
So
moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'll second that. All right, great. Productive evening.
Yeah, one more moment.
Well, thanks for putting up with us. I know you had no choice.
Yeah, I get it. He called the meeting early. I didn't want to have to be on the bus here. I didn't want to have to be
there.
I was hustling down here to get it.
Not possible.
He just got out of a meeting. He said, you know, let the
traffic there. You know, the traffic was really bad. Going from the University of Rochester. It was like miles and miles going up the whole end.
But what?
The Los Angeles freeway.
Exactly with the toilets.
It's been, see, all that discovery of land has been brought to them before. And I can't remember what they said about it.
The park?
Yeah.
So
we originally had a bunch of cars out there, so I knew it was a flight attendant.
But the new colonel sent over the major of the second in command and said that they would look favorably on a toilet.
Okay. That was like in the last year.
So prior to that, see, here's the way they explained it to us. The buffer zone, anything that's done in the buffer zone is done by a point system. They've got X number of points that go for different kinds of structures and whatever. And depending on the number of points, is the amount of munitions that they can load within that zone. So what they've done is they've gone by the biggest ship that's capable of docking there and how much ammunition they can put on that ship, and then it goes out.
Yeah.
Anything that gets built in that zone cuts down the amount of ammunition that they are legally able to ship out of the dock.
That ain't gonna matter. We're all gonna blow up anyway.
But no, it'll stop right at the edge of that circle.
Okay.
So there won't be a window busted.
Is that right?
I'm serious.
I've always said
we came close to all blowing up about 7 years ago when we had that ship fire over there. Let people realize that.
Well,
I remember that. Yeah.
There was a time that was even worse. That was lodged.
Was that the one that was down there at Fort Fisher?
Fort Fisher.
Oh,
that I didn't. They had to not only unload, they couldn't get it out, they cut it out, they torched it.
It was there for about a year, wasn't it, that mark?
We're at the fire station because of the hurricane. During the eye passing over, all of a sudden we hear sirens, and you look out, and there's military vehicles going like a bat out of hell down the street. Guys with 50 caliber guns and everything. They had people on every one of those barges during the hurricane.
Wow.
So we stayed away from that part of
town. I bet you. Someone who's lived the whole buffer zone. I'd rather be incinerated.
So plumbed hit by toilets then are not, would now be allowed if we could afford to build them.
At least under the present administrator rule.
Is that being proposed by council with all of something to do?
That really you ought to take up with the parking committee. There are ones.
Parking committee deals with toilets.
Sure. You got to park to get out.